Welcome to Dear Prudence. I'm your Prudence, Janae Desmond-Harris. Today we'll be discussing when to stop funding a quote-unquote train wreck daughter's lifestyle, how to deal with watching your parents take expensive vacations when you're completely broke, and whether to seek replacement costs when a friend's drunk uncle destroys your guitar. Here to help me out is my husband, Slate senior writer and podcast host Joel Anderson. He's the author of a new column at Slate called Emotional Investment, which is all about how we're handling money, we as Americans are handling money, and the many complicated feelings that surround it. So since he's supposed to be an expert now, we have all money-related questions for him today.
I'm more expert on the feelings part as opposed to the money part. You see, the emotional part?
Yeah.
I got that. The investment, okay. I don't know so much about that.
Well, we'll take what we can get since we have you here. So for your unsolicited advice, I told you I'm going to have you give some more that you haven't given before.
Yeah.
You did say you wanted to redo.
Mine was pretty bad in retrospect.
Wasn't it like, don't give unsolicited advice?
It was really, really bad. I think I had not thought it through before I came on.
It's okay.
I just kind of,
I mean,
it's
a good piece of advice.
It's
I would
a good
say
piece
you're probably
advice.
One of four people
It was
who
very
said that.
Cliche. And especially as I heard other people give better versions of it, I was like, oh man, I really messed that up. My only unsolicited advice around money is that only give money that you don't need back. And right. If you give it, never expect it back again.
Even if the person says,
even if they say, I'm going to pay you back. I'm going to, I'm going to work on this, such and such.
Yeah.
I really believe that like you just should not give people money with the expectation that they're working on the same timeline as you are. And also like if a person is in such a bad situation that they need money, presumably they need to pay off whatever they've just paid off and didn't get back to. I wouldn't want to put my friend in that sort of a position. I mean, also, and we know this as a couple, like co-signing can work. As long as you can afford it.
Right.
Right. Nobody with any sense would advise you to.
You're talking about like co-signing a loan.
Car
to
loan.
Help out a family member who couldn't otherwise get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like if you can handle the money, great. You know what I'm saying? And it probably is like you're doing a real solid for somebody in need.
How do you think it went when I did it?
I think it went about as well as it could go. Right. Because Janae, her cousin asked her to co-sign an auto loan for her. And she did. And really didn't hassle her. Never asked her, hey, why didn't you pay this month? Or why is this, bill late? Or why am I getting a call from the bank? She never harassed her. Janae would just pay sometimes without even saying anything about it. And her cousin still got mad at her.
Well, what ended up happening, I think, was I'm someone who's not great at money. I ended up it was sort of a bait and switch where I was supposed to be the co-signer. But when all the paperwork was done, I actually ended up being the primary signer.
Oh, yeah.
And she was the co-signer.
Yeah.
As a result, any mail related to the car was coming to me.
Right. So
when she was having parking tickets and like overdue fast track bills and stuff, I was getting those and I was updating her on them.
Yeah.
Not antagonizing, but just updating. And then she felt like that was an attack on her.
Right. And so, but see, the thing is, though, is that like you, without talking too much about our family, it's not like y'all were that close anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It probably anything could have happened that might have set it off. And so the good thing is that Janae was able to help a family member in need. And I would do the same. But if I literally need that money and I'm not sure that, me giving money here is going to permit me to not do something else here, then I would not do it. But I think people, the emotional part of this is that sometimes it feels good to do something for people. And I have an expectation you're going to get paid back for it.
Right. And I'll just add one more piece of money related advice or insight that you heard somewhere and you shared with me once. And this helps explain why I did this so people don't think I'm a dummy. People don't run out of money, they run out of people.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I felt like
God.
If I didn't do that, my cousin was going to run out of people and she had no one else to turn to.
Yes.
And I knew that she would have done the same for me if she could have, or someone else in my family. And I hate to see someone who has no one to turn to.
No, that's absolutely right.
Anyway. All's well that ends well. The car is out of my name now.
Yeah.
Everyone will
it got paid off. She came to Christmas dinner the time. So yeah, we're mostly back on air. Yeah.
Joel and I will dive into your questions after a short break. Can't get enough Dear Prudence? Then you should definitely join Slate Plus, Slate's membership program. You'll get to hear me answer an extra question every week just for members. With your subscription, you get ad-free listening across the Slate network and unlimited reading on the Slate site, including all Dear Prudence columns, past and present. Go to slate.com/PrudyPlus to sign up. It's just $15 for your first 3 months. Again, that's slate.com/prudyplus. Welcome back. You're listening to Dear Prudence, and I'm here with Slate's own Joel Anderson. Let's get started with our first letter. It's titled Hardline.
My wife and I are done funding our daughter's lifestyle. We paid for her college, her first marriage, and her first divorce. She's currently in love with the man she's known for 6 months and expecting a baby. This guy has an excuse for everyone in his life. Parents don't want him around. All his bosses were jerks. All his landlords are crooks. He can never catch a break. Our daughter adores him and refuses to hear any word against him. My wife and I can already see where this train wreck is headed, and we're fighting about what to do about it. I'm tired and want to tell our daughter she has two choices: move home and have the baby here, or deal with never getting another dime out of us. My wife is all about, well, what about the baby? But in my view, coddling our daughter didn't help, but maybe a dose of reality will. Our door will always be open, but the bank of mom and dad has its doors closed. I love my daughter, but she's 25 now, not 5. What do we do here?
So I think this letter raises an interesting question that's probably something married couples who have a lot of extra money should talk about, which is, if you're giving money to your children to help fund their lifestyle, weddings, college, apartments, extra cash, whatever it may be, what's the intention? Is it to make their life easier? Is it to give them maybe some of what you received at one point because you think that's fair? Or is it to control them?
That's a good question. Man, yeah, I really like the way you think about that. And, you know, it's interesting. The person, the letter writer talks about this guy, right? Mm-hmm. They're upset because, you know, they're upset about this person. He can't take care of himself. He's got beef with parents, bosses, landlords, and everything else. And he doesn't have a lot going on for him. But mm-hmm. you're funding your daughter's lifestyle.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that.
I mean, it did seem like, you know, you could very easily imagine his parents having the same sort of conversation.
They're equally yoked.
Yeah, they're equally yoked. They've had other people fund their lifestyles for a while. So maybe you didn't even think about the idea that they had something in common when you wrote this letter in.
He doesn't sound horrible. It's not as if they said he's about to go serve a jail sentence. He's on the sex offender registry. He shows signs of being abusive. He just sounds less than impressive.
Yeah.
And maybe off-putting. But this isn't someone who you need to go to the ends of the earth to rip your daughter away from. It's also the father of her child.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, do you really want to do something as dramatic because you're tired of paying for your daughter? Do you want to do something as dramatic as deny your grandchild one of their parents?
I don't even think they're tired of paying for her.
They don't like the choice.
Exactly. They don't like the choice and they want to control the choice.
But that's just like, I mean, you and I both know. The one thing that you want to do if you would like to draw your daughter and this guy that you can't stand closer is to draw that kind of line in the sand. Mm-hmm. When have you ever heard of somebody being like, you know what? Okay, I guess I'm going to leave this person alone.
Right.
My daddy says it's not good. I mean, does that voice. Yeah, no. In the voice of a dullard, as I like to say. But I mean, seriously, how often does that actually work?
So. Right. I also think on a practical level, look 5 years into the future. Mm-hmm. What's your plan for half a decade from now when your daughter is living with you, having followed your orders or given into your manipulation? She's a single mother. She still is a person who's not great at fully supporting herself. Mm-hmm. She's probably still not making amazing choices. At that point, are you going to always have the threat over her head of, I'm going to kick out you and the child into the street?
Right.
I mean, where does this end?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, you said in the letter, you know, she's 25. She's not 5. Well, 25 ain't shit either. And I like how you said about 5 years down the road, mm-hmm. because there's so much about the world that she doesn't know and will experience, especially now as a parent. So not only are you going to have likely growth and mm-hmm. maturity just on that basis, but also, do you really want her memories of this time and the baby's memories of this time to be about how the father pitched a fit and created an estrangement in the family? Or would it be better to have a story about they rallied together and supported each other and figured out a way through a really difficult time?
There's a middle ground here. You can put limits on the money mm-hmm. you give.
Yeah. Why not give the money that you already were giving anyway?
Right.
So you love your daughter. You're going to love your grandchild. Prioritize that and support her now and give her the money you were always giving her. And if she asks for more, then you can have a conversation about, okay, like, what is your plan?
Right, exactly. Like, is this guy never going to work?
Yeah.
Are we supporting both of you forever?
Yeah.
I mean, at least let her get through the maternity leave phase of things.
Yeah. Like, it's like they can talk gently about the train wreck to come when you see it coming down the tracks, and she can too.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, you're just not going to get that. So love up on her, man, yeah, if you can.
I mean, what kind of life do you want? You know, mm-hmm. Do you want a daughter who loves you? Obviously, I'm assuming here the money isn't really an issue. You have the money to give. It's not as if it would be one thing if you just had to stop supporting her because you needed the money. That would be fine. I don't think that's what's going on here. If you really want to be a jerk about this and you have tight conditions on the money you're going to give her going forward, you need to sit down in a written contract. You need to do this. You need to not do this. The person you date needs to have these qualities. And then you need to look at that contract and realize that you sound insane.
Ooh, that's a good way of saying it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go to ask your friends how you sound.
Yeah.
That's an inside joke between the two of us. She can tell you about some other time. But yeah, no, I really believe that you're mad at your daughter about making a bad choice with a partner. Well, welcome to the world, sir. You know what I mean? Like, this is what it's going to be like. You know, you never had any guarantees around that anyway. And like you said, the money is not an issue here. Like, obviously, you can afford to give it. If you want to put conditions on it for down the road, fine. But like, it seems like the time to have this conversation about what she's doing and who she's doing it with, that time passed.
Right.
It's happened now. Move
and
forward.
Keep in mind that if he's that bad and that disappointing, and if they, in fact, can't support themselves, even with the money you're giving, like maybe she will move back home voluntarily.
It might happen anyway.
With much more love in her heart than she would under these circumstances being forced. You're listening to The Dear Prudence Show, and when we come back, we'll be reading more of your letters. Stay with us. Welcome back to Dear Prudence. I'm here with my guest, Slate's own Joel Anderson, to answer your letters. Our next question is titled, Exasperated.
I'm struggling. When I was a teenager, my parents triangulated me into their budgeting issues. My dad was a cheapskate and my mom was a spender. I was given cash for back-to-school shopping for myself and my older brother and was sent to the grocery store to ensure my mom didn't make extraneous purchases. Now, my dad earns a double pension from teaching in different school districts and has gotten $500,000 inheritance from my grandparents. They have gone on lots of fancy vacations in the last 5 years. Italy, Russia, Egypt, Panama, a South African safari, several domestic trips as well. While I can appreciate how lucky they are to be able to do these things, it's hard for me to celebrate. I personally have about $15,000 of medical debt, and my family and I will not likely be able to go on a vacation this year or next. My mom has me watching her pets while she travels and wants to regale me with all the details. I can't help but be resentful. I don't expect a huge inheritance, but the degree to which they're flaunting their wealth now, after putting me in a terribly uncomfortable position for my teenage years, is so hard for me.
So I do think the way the letter writer was raised sounds messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little traumatic.
Yeah.
They had way too much stress put on them as a child.
It wasn't fair.
But I would say we need to separate out the two issues. Mm-hmm. One, healing from and maybe talking with parents about the upbringing and how difficult it was and how much it hurt. And on the other hand, taking issue with the parents blowing through their inheritance. And are they really even flaunting it or just living? I think you got to kind of let the second one go.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you, man. Like, you were involved in some really tense, sensitive financial issues that you shouldn't have to been. But, you know, one tough part of life is this. You might never get what you think you deserve. Right.
I feel like you're such a dad now. That's like a dad lecture.
Is it?
One tough part of life. You know, life isn't fair, son.
Well, I mean, I'm just like, you think that like, oh, well, you know, my parents put me through this, therefore this. You didn't talk about any other sort of abuse or like you know, other sort of childhood that you had. And if that's an element of this, fine. But like, even then, your issue is, I want some of that money they're spending right now. Not I want them to make amends for the childhood I had.
Right. Or just for them to listen to me talk about how hard it was and come to an understanding of how it could have been better.
Yeah.
I think it's a strange expectation that they pay you in dollars and cents for the emotional harm they caused, even though the harm was around money.
Yeah.
Well, and also, just not to be dismissive, but I don't think it sounds like you're doing horribly right now. Mm-hmm. It's not as if
$15,000 of medical debt is bad. but it's not.
It's pretty bad. I don't think it's crazy. It's not as if you're living in an extended stay motel and having trouble getting food. Can't go on vacation this year, probably, or next.
I mean,
tough.
Yeah.
But not not the kind of situation where I'd expect your parents to kind of reach in and rescue you.
So, yeah, unfortunately, while it does seem like you may have, you know, not gotten exactly what you wanted and you couldn't go on vacation this year, you're not going to be eligible for charity this year because you didn't get to go. But one thing that I did not hear from you in this letter or read anywhere, have you ever asked them for money? And I'm not saying you should, but if you need some and you're in debt and this is really over your head, maybe you should ask them for the money.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Why not just ask?
Yeah, just ask for what you need.
For a loan and then never pay it back.
Yeah, that's right.
They can't really accept
Hopefully
that.
Your parents will understand. Yeah. It's like, hey, look, they're not going to be, they're not good for that.
That's a really good idea, just ask. I didn't think about that, but I would say ask in a way that's not, you know, you guys messed me up during my childhood over all this money stuff and we were broke. I felt broke and now I really am broke and now you're flaunting all this stuff and it's out of control. Can I have some money?
Yeah.
It's really just, guys, I'm struggling and I wonder if you could spare anything to help me out of this hole.
Yeah. And I'm not really asking you to be passive aggressive or anything, but if it helps, you like maybe you can pull back from watching their pets, being there for them when they go on these trips that they want to go on. Like, I don't know how often that they go on these trips or how often you would have to beg out of that particular obligation. But like, maybe just do that for a little bit until you can wrap your head around how to handle this in a more lasting way. You know, and also, like, I mean, just personally, is it possible to be happy for them?
That's the exact next point I was going to make. And be happy for yourself.
Yes.
I get so many letters from people whose parents are coming to them saying, I have tons of gambling debt and I need you to pay it off. Or I expect you to pay for me to continue to live in my 5-bedroom house that I won't move out from.
Yeah.
But I need this money and why aren't you getting me better gifts? So your parents, I mean, I know you would love more from them and all of us would love more money. But they're kind of taking care of themselves and leaving you alone when there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, man, obviously they went through a really difficult time in their marriage. They made it to the other side and they like each other enough to still be together and enjoy each other. Man, that is a blessing.
Yeah.
That's me sounding like a dad too, I know.
Grandfather.
But grandfather right there. But yeah, man, like, I mean, look, you know, again, you can talk with them about doing whatever it is to make your childhood, you know, to come to grips with your childhood and how you were treated during it. But like, man, you've got your parents, they're alive, they're happy. They gave you something to look up to, my brother.
Yeah. And one quick final note, if there is something you want to raise with them, which this really isn't in your control, but you do have a legitimate interest in this, I would say that you could have a conversation with them about your hope that they're putting aside enough money to meet their needs as they get older and stop traveling and need care or need a new home or whatever it may be.
Right.
So that you don't have to take that on when obviously you can't afford it.
Yeah, no, you know what? I didn't even think about, like, maybe this is a reminder that, like, oh, you know, are they still bad about spending money? Maybe they're going to be going down that road again.
Yeah.
And again, that's a conversation that hopefully you all will be able to have without it being sort of accusatory, right?
Exactly. This is Dear Prudence, and when we come back, more letters from you and hopefully some helpful advice. Stay tuned. I'm Janae, and you're listening to Dear Prudence. Joel, are you ready for our last question of the day?
Been ready.
Okay. This letter is titled, Vexed Violinist.
During the pandemic, I taught myself music and I'm pretty good for an amateur musician. At an estate sale, I found a good violin for a few $100s. It was easily worth $2,000. A friend was getting married and I offered to play as a wedding gift. The ceremony went off without a hitch. The reception was a different story. Basically, my friend's uncle got drunk as a skunk and had to be escorted out. He got belligerent and ended up crashing right on the table my violin was on and leaving it in pieces. The case was open because I had been explaining how I taught myself to play to another guest. My friend's father promised to pay to replace the violin. I have it in writing. I waited until my friend got back from his honeymoon and sent them both links to what a replacement cost. My friend was furious and accused me of trying to hustle them for more money when he knew what I paid for the violin originally. I told him I didn't want cash. I wanted a replacement violin of the same caliber. His father agreed to it, If they wanted to blame anyone, take it up with the drunk uncle. We argued some more, and I said I would take them to small claims court. They paid the replacement cost, but my friendship is obviously over. The problem is, my girlfriend is still friends with the bride, and she thinks I went overboard here since none of us are exactly rich. We keep arguing about it. I did a huge favor playing at this wedding, and my instrument got trashed. The only decent thing to do would be to pay for a replacement. The bad guy here is the drunk uncle. If you drove and trashed the front end of my car, it doesn't matter if it is a beater, the car repairs need to be paid. We are still arguing. I am tired of it. Help!
So this is probably not getting to the core of the issue, but are you supposed to insure your instruments?
Oh, you know what? That's a look at me, finance expert. I'm just looking.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
real
looking
sad.
At you
what happened to that violin? Oh man, that's terrible. Ooh, yeah, you probably should have, but I don't know because it was already bought. Seems like it was already bought used. So
yeah, and I guess this person was not a regular wedding performer.
Yeah,
but I did kind of think. Part of volunteer. So if you're a professional, and I did Google this a little bit. For example, I Googled what happens if someone damages the DJ's equipment at a wedding. Ooh. So I feel like that would be a more common situation. Mm-hmm. According to the unofficial answers I saw, usually the contract will include something about that. Mm-hmm. So who has to pay for it? And it's usually the people hosting the wedding if things get damaged. So letter writer, I'm thinking that if you were a professional violinist, you would have had a contract that said, if one of the guests drunkenly ruins my violin, they pay for it, the replacement cost. But you were volunteering. And I wonder if part of volunteering is sort of volunteering to take on all the risks of what might happen.
Not really, I don't think.
No.
No. But I do take your point. Seriously, he said, I'm an amateur musician. You know, and so accordingly, like this is all handled sort of amateurishly.
Right.
And like, I mean, like there's no lesson in this. Like, I assume you're not going to be in a situation like this again where you're performing for a friend with this violin or whatever. So how long have y'all been together? How long has she known your friends? Do they still hang out together just without you? And it seems like you've already drawn your line in the sand here. You can't be moved.
Right.
They are wrong.
Right.
That uncle is that uncle's to blame. And your girlfriend knows this and she's chosen to proceed accordingly. So she thinks you went overboard. You can't convince her otherwise. Well, it seems like it's a problem. Like, can you live with that?
Well, yeah, I think the letter writer has chosen the violin and the relationships.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be that passionate about your violin and getting a violin of equal value back. But there are just some things that are going to come along with that when you go around demanding money and taking people to small claims court.
Right. And actually, I think you got a point, man. I think that like, yo, they should have been, you know, oh my God, I feel so bad. We'll cover the violin. I think your girlfriend should have been like, you know what, man, it's too bad that they fought you and you had to go to court on this.
The used violin value would have been a more reasonable demand than the replacement cost.
Yeah.
Because if they just gave you the couple hundred dollars that you spent on it when you got a really good deal, you could go on eBay and get a good deal again.
Yeah.
I hope. Maybe.
I mean, it's really, yeah. I mean, you took it out though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you didn't put it in your room and put it on display. You brought it out into the world. Mm-hmm. So like there was a chance that something could happen.
Yeah.
Something happened.
You got to watch your valuables really carefully.
Yeah. Insurance would have been. Yeah. You just left it out. You just left it out
at
a wedding around all these other people. Again, I don't want to minimize that, but the issue is that because obviously, like the violin, the money, it's all been sent. But do you want to be in a relationship with someone who won't back you during what I'm sure was a very stressful legal situation and through the end of an important friendship?
Mm.
Like this isn't about right or wrong. It's about what you want out of this relationship. And it's one thing for her to disagree. It's another for her to be like, they're right, and I'm going to keep hanging out with them.
I got to say, it doesn't seem sustainable to me, even though you weren't horribly wrong and she's not horribly wrong.
Yeah, right. Like, you're tired of it.
Yeah.
That seems like the answer here. Your things that you're tired of, you just don't continue to do. And so, you know, one way we could look at it, maybe it's really cool that your girlfriend feels comfortable enough to disagree with you over something this important to you and still maintain the relationship. It's just like, we can disagree. You know how those couples they talk about, we don't agree on politics or whatever, but they still can manage to be together. Like, maybe this is them.
Think about how much more time you'll have for violin practice when you're single.
Mm.
Okay. Okay, those are all the questions we have for this week. It's been fun and hopefully helpful. Thank you for being here.
It's always fun with me. Wow, that's great. Thanks for saying it. I appreciate it.
I think it's always fun in general, but yeah, of course you're part of that.
Especially, yeah. Well, thanks for having me on.
Thanks anytime. For all your financial insights.
Well, I hope people learned a lot of lessons today from me.
Follow Joel for more Bitcoin investment strategies.
Hey, I don't know about that. But yeah, reach out to us at emotional.investment@slate.com, please.
Follow Joel on Twitter at @ByJoelAnderson and make sure to read his Slate column, Emotional Investment, which is all about money and how we feel about it. It publishes on Saturdays. Do you need help getting along with partners, relatives, coworkers, and people in general? Write to me. Go to slate.com/Prudy. That's slate.com/PRUDIE. The Dear Prudence column publishes every Thursday.
If you'd like to hear your question answered on the podcast, we are looking for letter writers who would be comfortable recording their questions for the show. You can stay anonymous.
Dear Prudence is produced by Sierra Spragley Ricks and me, Janae Desmond Harris, with a special thanks to Maura Curry. Editorial help from Paola De Verona. Daisy Rosario is senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's VP of audio. I'm your Dear Prudence, Janae Desmond Harris. Until next time.